This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to the Rainbow Report. News, opinion, current affairs for the Rainbow community from Joy 94.9, Australia's only full-time gay and lesbian radio station. Gay and lesbian radio station. And now your host, Doug Pollard. Doug Pollard.
I love my little bit of echo there, don't you? Well, thanks to Chris and Cam for the Drive Factory, hard drives, I assume. And good evening and welcome to the Rainbow Report. Today we're talking about openness. Now, openness doesn't just mean being gay and out, although that is crucially important. It also means being proud and out, even if you're not gay, in support of us. Straight allies are vital to our future, so I'm very pleased that my Joy colleague, Hikaru Freeman, has secured an interview with the US founder of the Athlete Ally program, Hudson Taylor. Yesterday, Athlete Ally announced they'd signed Wallaby David Pocock as their Australian ambassador. Being open can take you into hostile territory. Sydney's long-standing and highly respected 2010 organisation, which works with and supports young people, quote, of diverse genders, sexes and sexualities, their families and friends, were invited to take part in a festival by the river in Parramatta, but they fell foul of the mayor, John Chedid, who demanded they take down their banners. He has since issued what looks to be a distinctly minimalist apology. Will it be enough? I gather he's given a more fulsome one privately to 2010. We'll talk to the acting managing director, Terence Humphreys. He has that story for us. One of the more surreal events of the week was the appearance of a Facebook page for something called Monogamous Gays Australia. A same-same article quickly followed, and then a storm of online reaction, and all Andy did was to start a group calling for gay men to think seriously about marriage and monogamy. Why all the hostility, I wonder? And why did Andy decide to do it? Well, he joins us later and we'll ask him. And last but not least, we're coming up to Pride March. This year, the road has been a little rockier than usual with a change of president, bad weather on the day last year hitting their income, reserves dwindling for a while. But it's all going ahead, contrary to any rumours to the contrary that were floating around a while back. And to clue us up on exactly what's happening, Pride March VP Matt Rennick joins the show tonight. And finally, we've got Rod Swift aboard to complete the lineup. For once, not tweeting about Metro. You've been doing that a lot lately.
I will escape it.
Well, as I said just now, it's been a bit of a bumpy ride at Pride March Victoria since bad weather wiped out last year's post-March fair, and with it their major source of income. So we thought we'd call in a representative of Pride. We've got the Vice President, Matt Rennick, with us now to tell us how you've weathered that storm and what followed since, and what you've got in store for us in, I think it's about 10 days' time, isn't it?
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, Doug.
Yeah, you're more than welcome. Now, that was a bit of a blow when that storm blew in, wasn't it?
When it blew in and you saw people coming down into the park and go straight out.
out to the pub.
Absolutely. The jaw dropped, and it was a very, very difficult day. The depressing thing at the end of the day was that about 6 o'clock, the clouds cleared, the sun came out, there were still a few hardy people, probably the alcoholics, and they were propping up the bar at the time. And at the time, we were going to shut off at 6:30, just shut down the park. Yeah. But we ended up going through till about 9 o'clock that night. So
you did manage to recoup something?
We recouped a little, but not quite.
A little. And then, of course, Brett Hayhoe, after many, 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 12 years, I think, as president, moved on.
5 years as president, 12 on the board.
On the board, so you've had a kind of generational change, too.
Absolutely.
That's a lot to cope with in 1 year.
It's been a difficult year, but it's also been an exceptionally rewarding year. With that generational change, there's new ideas, there's a new discussion that takes place, and we've opened up that discussion with the community, and it's been able to have things like Bake Off, where we were able to get $13,500 back in the bank, pay off a few people that we needed to pay off, which that was essentially what we needed to do to then get to a point of, do we have a Pride March next year? You know, and that's a heavy responsibility that weighs on every member of our board, and not one that we take lightly. The great thing is that we've been able to stabilise, if you like, the organisation. And moving forward, we've got some great things happening, but 2013, we've got to do a few things. The weather's got to be nice. We've done our little projections in terms of bar sales and that. So get down. There's no fence this year. Yeah. So support us by not having a fence and get in the bar and drink to your heart's content. Beer's $5. Spirits are $7. I don't think you can buy that anywhere up and down St Kilda for those prices. And so it's been a deliberate attempt to get a bit of money back into the coffers.
Yeah, well, I know what it's like running an event that is utterly weather dependent. I mean, I used to be on the board at Chill Out, and if Carnival doesn't make money, then you're stuffed for the next year. You know, I mean, there's lots of events that are part of Chill Out, but the only one that actually makes money for Chill Out is the Carnival. And if you have a bad day,
well, and in the past, the March costs us a significant amount of money to put on.
Sure.
And with the public liability, all those things that are behind the scenes that people aren't aware of. So that's why things like a bar, people, yeah, they can bring their picnic lunch as much as they like, but you know what? By at least buying one drink or two drinks, you're supporting the organisation and you're securing the future.
Now, talking about supporting the organisation, one of the things I always used to hear complaints about in the past was that the businesses along the street were not supporting the Pride March. They were not coming on board as sponsors. They were basically taking the attitude, well, you know, you bring in all the customers, we don't have to pay for them. Why should we give you any money? Has that attitude changed?
Absolutely. That's been the great thing of the Back to the Community campaign. We also had a community forum on Joy 94.9. And it opened those lines of communication. So the Fitzroy Street Traders Association has been fantastic. Martin Foley, the local MP, obviously in a two-horse race, always backs self-interest in terms of him protecting his job, but also his constituents.
He's been very good to us.
Absolutely.
As a community.
And he's opened doors with a number of organisations. We've also recently secured the Prince of Wales, which for the first time, they are supporting Pride March. It's always been something that's been in the craw of people that they don't get on board. But
It's always been a bit of a sticky relationship in the past, hasn't it?
It has, but they've also had a change of leadership, if you like. and it's amazing what happens when there is that change, that there is suddenly the terms of reference change.
Yeah, well, it's a chance to recalibrate all the relationships you've got. And
absolutely.
In some respects, it might look like a bad thing that you lost that money last time, but it's also given you a big spur.
Correct. Absolutely. And it sort of it highlights the fact that it's not necessarily going to be here forever. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to get on board and you have to support it. And those businesses up and down the street, they could possibly lose St Kilda Fest. I don't know. But they need to get on board.
Matt, I've got a quick question for you. Do you think that, you know, the bump in the road, which you've experienced, and of course, the with every possible outcome of the risk of, you know, folding potentially, do you think also the local business realise there is a symbiotic relationship there, that if they don't get behind something like this, first we lose such a great community event, but more importantly, they lose potentially some business?
Absolutely. It's in their best interests that they've got a state event that has been held for 18 years. You know, you can't just all of a sudden dream up an event and expect that kind of support overnight. You know, the recent talk around the Grand Prix, St Kilda Fest, all those things, all of a sudden, Pride March loses or goes off the scene. What have you got?
I was going to say, it wouldn't be great if we were the Grand Prix and getting $30 million per annum, but that's another story.
We tweeted that yesterday, actually.
Thanks, Ted.
So, yes, more than happy to take Ted. Bernie Eccleston's 32 and a half.
Yeah. Well, I, again, going back to my Chill Out experience, you know, Chill Out folded for a year and didn't appear, and that really did get the local businesses back on board, because they, you know, suddenly this huge influx of income disappeared.
But it's also being honest with your community as well.
Yeah.
We went out to the community and we said, look, this has been an absolute shocker of a year. We've gone through every single last cent and more. If you support us, if you love turning up, or even if you haven't turned up for 5 years, do you want this event in the GLBTI calendar? Get behind it.
I was going to say that's one of the most important things, because we really don't think of it. It's like out of sight, out of mind, until something happens where suddenly there is a viability issue, and then suddenly people think, wait a second, I've forgotten about this for so long. I haven't supported it. And they start coming out.
Yep.
Well, we've got one listener here who James has messaged in saying, $7 for spirits, bargain, totes there.
So perfect. We look forward to
seeing it, James. That is totes annoying. That'll get a tweet, by the way. I know you're writing the tweet now, James.
Yeah. Now, you've also had a bit of a publicity windfall, in a sense, in that you've got Jason Ball leading off the event this year. Yep. Now, that's obviously, he's been very high profile. He's come out of nowhere and made a big name for himself in a very short space of time.
Absolutely. It's an important campaign, no, to homophobia.
Well, of course it is.
And homophobia within sport. And part of our recalibration, if you like, of the event is having a bit more of a contemporary sense of an issues-based march, which that no one wants to see the board march. But, you know, they want someone who has actually gone out there, has supported his community and gone out on a limb. Yep. I mean, it's fairly dangerous for him. You know, the results could be anything, really, and he's been great.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're going to stay with us for the rest of the show, aren't
Absolutely.
You, Matt? So
yep.
we'll tie that one up there, because we do have some other guests to get on board. Now, they used to call homosexuality the love that dare not speak its name. But after this week, I think what we have to say is monogamy is the love that dare not speak its name. Andy called on us gay men to, quote, make a change, to grow up. He said, we're all searching for someone special, yet most of us are going about it the wrong way. Like all of you, I want to settle down in a loving, committed relationship with one man I can grow old with. I know something's got to give. I need to make a stand for more than a one-night stand. Well, he has a good turn of phrase. Were you expecting, Andy, that kind of reaction, that kind of furious reaction that you got on Same Same and on Facebook?
Yeah, look, thanks for having us on the show, Doug. I'm really excited by the response it's created. It needs to be a discussion that the gay community and more broadly society needs to have about the importance and equality of love and the importance of holding off in a relationship.
Yeah, just got a message in here saying, I love monogamy. I used to be into serial monogamy, but these days I think parallel works better. There's obviously... There's obviously great division, though, within the community. A lot of people saying, you know, gay men in particular are kind of not made for monogamy.
Yeah, look, I disagree. I think the story is best told through my own experience, and I guess the...
I've been asked to ask you about that, too, by another listener.
Yeah, look, I guess it's the learnings and reflections you have as yourself as a gay man. We're not giving any role models as we're growing up, so it's often difficult to know how to have a loving, committed, faithful relationship when we have a scene that evangelises sex and it's on tap. You've got your no-strings-attached NSA one-night stands, and there really isn't really a vision of something more, and I believe that needs to change. My own story is a story, a merry-go-round of many men, and I was starting to feel like my character was like a piece of paper that you'd photocopy, and the original character image that you've copy that copy, and you can no longer see what I look like, you know. And the difficulty with that is it's sexual gratification that is seeking to fill a void of social isolation and loneliness. And this was the case for me.
So you're saying that you basically found casual relationships ultimately unsatisfying. You kept entering into them and finding that they weren't giving you what you needed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know this isn't for everybody, and certainly I'm not out there judging others. This has been my own personal experience. But I felt that by doing so, you know, I was only still ever empty. It was only a temporary fix. And I think it was my last relationship that was for a month that was the catalyst for me starting MGA. You know, we slept together on the first night, and then there were the terms of endearment, the I love yous, and it developed a false sense of security. And I think walking away from that hurt and an ending and realising that it wasn't made out to what it needed to be was, you know, you really need to get to know somebody. You've got to keep the romance alive. You've got to, there has to be the pursuit. There has to be the chase. And getting
in other words, you're basically an old-fashioned romantic, aren't you?
Oh, you could call it that. But, you know, I'm a fella in my 30s, and I think there's so many out there. I started the group because Doug, I don't think I'm alone, and I know yourself, and it was so I was so encouraged to hear about your long-term relationship with your own partner over 20 years. I don't think we're alone with what we're seeking.
Rod Swift is with us in the studio now. Rod Swift could be said to be quite the opposite of you in many respects, I think. Rod.
Andy, good evening. By the way, I'm not the opposite of you. I think I'm post you. I know it's like I feel I'm post gay at the moment. It's really quite funny in my life because my history is I've had three serially monogamous relationships, one when I was 18 through the age of 27 for 9 years, and then the next one for 5 years, the next one or 5 and a half, then the next one for just over 4, and left with a huge mortgage and huge debt after that one. And now I've found that basically as I've approached, I'm just past 40, I've given up on the hunt. I've given up on the ideals of romance. Can you understand why some people might, if they've reached a stage of comfort in their life, may want to, and I'm not saying necessarily go out and let's say have fun with anything that comes along, but may need to think about having, as one person just said on the SMS, parallel monogamy. I, for example, am involved with 2 or 3 people at the moment, I don't mind admitting that, and they're all very, very close friends. I've known them for a couple of years, but I have parallel monogamy because it's the next best thing. Can you understand why some people might find that, especially when they get later in life and they think, well, I've got to give up the ghost now, might be a way forward?
Rod, it's really brave of you to have that discussion with the community, and I respect that, we respect that. I guess the difficulty at the moment in the gay community and society is that monogamy is the minority within the gay community.
No, I'd agree with that completely.
You know, the gay community is struggling as the minority within society. So the challenge is that as a younger gay man, you know, who out there is having this discussion about the importance with marriage equality, equal love, as a minority, just champion the virtues of a proper, committed, loving, faithful, monogamous gay relationship?
So you're tying that together with the push for marriage, which means, am I reading you right there, and you're equating marriage with monogamy?
Well, I believe that that's what it is. As I said, when you have those vows and you make that commitment, be that a civil union or marriage, you're making that pledge to somebody else. Now, I respect that there are many forms of relationships and the way that they look and the way that they operate, being open or closed. But again, that monogamy is the minority. We need a society to have a discussion to bring equality back to the love that we share for the same sex, be it gay men or women. And this is a discussion that, whilst we're talking about the marriage debate, it isn't being had. Love is equal, and we need to keep the romance alive.
Yeah, look, Andy, I can't disagree with you there. When somebody makes a commitment to another person as in a relationship, especially when you're moving in together, possibly getting a mortgage together, there needs to be a serious conversation about monogamy and also about how that relationship gets basically kept alive, because relationships just don't happen when you press a button and you enter into them. They are a lifelong thing, as Doug would attest.
They are indeed quite a lot of work, and I think that's what a lot of people mistake. This is why I'm a little nervous about the kind of romantic love angle, because it is a bit kind of hearts and flowers, we fall in love and the feeling is enough, and that's supposed to sustain the relationship thereon, whereas that's very nice at the start, but from there on in it's quite a slog and you do have to put a lot of effort and work into it. I can see Matt sitting over
Matt's
there
chomping.
Chomping at the bit, so to speak.
The whole monogamous thing, I know a lot of older gay men who have been in 20, 30 year relationships. They're not monogamous by any stretch of the imagination, and it's still a beautiful, growing relationship. And it's not like it's a second best. I'll just be in it for the comfort. There's something that they derive from that, and I think we're sort of narrowing the focus by going that way.
Maybe if I can pitch this to everyone on the panel as well as Andy, do you think that in regards to gay men and relationships, there needs to be a greater discussion, as Andy's calling for, in regards to the holistic viewpoint of relationships? A lot of people think that a relationship starts when, you know, you go on a date and maybe something happens on the first night, you end up in each other's bedrooms, you're talking about love and it's the honeymoon phase, as I'll call it, and then suddenly it starts to wear off. Are we actually getting into relationships in the wrong way? Andy, what do you think?
Rod, I'd agree with you. Again, it comes down to the lack of role models in our community. You know, we've now got sports stars coming out as gay, which is really rewarding, but we're not talking about the relationships that they're having. You know, one of the most high-profile relationships is with Ellen DeGeneres, and it's exciting that we've got an Australian in the limelight there, where we can have that discussion about what it takes for two ladies to have a relationship. mature, and again, that has that longevity and that commitment. But again, we look at our parents. You know, I've got sisters, you know, they're with boyfriends, they're holding off for their one. There's not a discussion in society about what it takes for a gay man to have a monogamous, committed relationship. And I think that we need to have that, and we need to celebrate that.
Matt.
Yeah, I was really interested in the letter that you wrote to Same Same. It was along those lines of my mother taught or spoke with my sisters in terms of that holding out process. Do you think it's really a gay issue, or is it a sort of female daughter or male son issue that's up for discussion in that regard?
I'm so pleased you said that, because I don't actually think it comes down to sexuality. But what you do see is, regardless of straight or gay, is their mothers aren't having that discussion with their straight sons. And there's this expectation that women should hold off. And I'm not saying that, therefore, any lesbian women shouldn't and gay men shouldn't. But regardless of the sexuality preference of a child and their gender, all people, I think, need to have a lot more self-worth in getting to know somebody before they do the most intimate act that I believe, and has for me, created a false sense of security in relationships. And as a result, you've grown too close too quickly. As far as relationships that people have been in for years and the rules change, well, you know, I'm not here judging them. And that's the exciting thing about the gay community, that we've got people from so many walks and being inclusive. But we do need to have that debate, and we do need to have that discussion. And that's why I've been so excited with the amount of interest and the amount of fire debate that this has caused out of the same forum.
Well, I'm interested with what you said about what your mother told your sisters. And it's a well-known fact, I think it's well documented in the psychological literature, that if you stand in the way of a relationship, if a parent stands in the way of a relationship with another person for one of their children, you know, it's the whole Romeo and Juliet thing. They want what they can't have. It strengthens the desire. The longer they hold off or are prevented from getting together, the more likely it is that they will, in fact, bond. So there is something to this thing about, you know, don't go to bed on the first date. Because if you really want to build something, holding off is something you need to do in order to kind of like build up the requisite head of steam. A couple of messages come in here from one from Dean Beck here. Said, how much of monogamy is about control and how much is about being normal, none of which equates to love? Interesting point there.
And I've also seen lust, Doug.
And Mark from Rabin says, monogamy, some believe, is exactly the, quote, heteronormative claptrap that plays straight into the Bible basher's hands. We can't get through a single program without heteronormative creeping in it sometimes.
Can we retire that word, like homophobia?
What he basically means is, do you think this is more about kind of like aping straight society, or do you think, in fact, aping straight society is a good thing?
Yeah, I think, again, Doug, it comes down to the fact that monogamy is the minority, and it's important that as a society we're having this debate. And, it's, you know, again, it's exciting that people are generating these comments. Again, it shows the diversity of the gay community. And, again, Monogamous Gay Australia, MGA, is only one of many organisations that are out there that are championing these virtues. But, again, there's a void. There hasn't been a discussion about monogamy. Again, putting the words gay and monogamy in the same sentence, many people say don't go together and they cringe or laugh. And that's why it's created this fiery debate. But I believe that we do need to start a gay reputation revolution that creates a new gay identity where society, not the gay community, society associates the word gay with monogamy, and we can champion the virtues of equal love like Obama has done in his inaugural speech.
Well, I reckon you're on a very uphill track with that, but good luck with it. And as I say, there was a furious kind of conversation going on. If you had to sort of divide it up and say, you know, how many of your correspondents were pro and how many were anti-monogamy?
Yeah, look, again, it's really something that the people are diametrically opposed with. And what excited me is that everybody has an opinion, and this affects and touches everybody. But regardless if somebody's monogamous or open or polygamous, they need to make the decision for themselves. And if MGA in this discussion has sparked that, we've been successful. With a forum that generated over 5,000 views and 2 opinion pieces with over 2,000, we've had over now 200 friends and supporters that have put their hand up and said, Andy, we love what you're doing. We want to be part of it. And this is only the start of a journey. It's the start of a greater and broader discussion with society, and we're excited to be there and to be that support group to help those who want to hold out for the one.
Well, that's great. Andy, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us this evening, and the best of luck.
Rod.
I have put links to your Facebook page into the program blog at stirrer.com.au so people can find you that way. Once again, thanks for joining us.
The Rainbow Report. News, opinion and current affairs for the Rainbow community.
And this is Doug Pollard, your host. We're talking tonight about openness in all its forms. With me in the studio, got Matt Rennick from Pride March and Rod Swift. We were just talking there to Andy. I've just been asked to point out the Facebook page is called Monogamous Gays Australia, if you want to look it up, or if you want to sign up, or if you want to find out any more about it. And there's also a couple of articles on samesame.com.au if you want to follow up there. Mark from Arabin has a message in again saying straight monogamous relationships aren't particularly normal either, from what I understand. Yeah, that's kind of what I heard.
A spectrum, Doug. It's a spectrum.
It's a spectrum. Anyway, Sydney, with its world-famous Mardi Gras, may be our iconic gay city, but venture away from the centre and into the wild, wild west, and things are a bit different. The mayor of Parramatta didn't much care to see banners with the words gay and lesbian on them at his family festival, and that's when it all came apart. The banners belong to an organisation called 2010, and their acting managing director is Terence Humphreys, and he's on the line now. Good evening, Terence.
Oh, good evening, Greg.
Doug.
Oh, beg your pardon. No. Okay.
That's all right. You get used to it. I've been called a lot of things in my time, and that's one of the more polite ones.
Just don't call him Shirley.
Yeah, Shirley not. Now, tell us a little bit about what happened here. You went to this Parramatta River Festival at the invitation of the local council.
That's right.
And then the mayor threw a tantrum.
Beg your pardon?
And then the mayor threw a tantrum, basically.
Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say a tantrum. In fact, the mayor didn't engage with us on the day. We spoke to one of his advisors. But we were given a message from one of the council workers that we are no to, and they suggested that we needed to take the banner down because the Lord Mayor had asked us to do so based on having some complaints made about its content. And our coordinator, who was there on the day, attempted to approach the Lord Mayor, but was intercepted by a spokesperson. And our coordinator spoke with the spokesperson to kind of clarify it, and kind of saying that, you know, there wasn't any real reason to be there unless we had the banners up, because otherwise no one would know who we were. So as such, I made the decision that we weren't really safe at that event, and we had our young school-age clients with us, and my concern was first and foremost for them.
So you didn't think it appropriate to sort of stand your ground and refuse to take the banners down? Because I know there's quite a few people online were kind of saying, why didn't you do that?
We did explore those options, but as I said, if it had just been staff, then perhaps I may have done so, but it wasn't the avenue to take that discussion further. That it wasn't, you know, we clearly weren't going to have a discussion with the mayor about it. And as I said, we had clients who were there with us, young school-age clients that we had a duty of care to, and we needed to put their needs first.
Yeah. Now, what was the wording on this banner that got everybody so fired up?
Oh, okay. It basically explained that 2010 provides services to people of diverse genders, sexes and sexualities, and that includes people who are gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender. It didn't say intersex, but we also work with intersex people as well, as well as their families and communities. It's a place to be you with the support that you need.
And plus your name, 2010, of course.
Yes, that's right.
Was there any illustration on these banners at all, or was it just words?
No, just had our logo and those words. It's really just a banner that we use at community events to tell people who we are.
So it wasn't any kind of slogan, and there wasn't any kind of raunchy pictures or anything like that?
No, there's no images. It was just pretty much what people saw in the media or on our Facebook page.
Yeah, because a number of people again said, oh, there's that big blank space on that banner on Facebook. They've whited something out. You didn't.
No. No, it was stylistically arranged by a prior staff member.
Oh, yes, I know all about leaving white space.
Yeah. I believe it. I mean, it's just not really intended to be promoting anything beyond just the basics of it.
No, it was just informative.
Yeah. It just explains what we are, who we are, and the support that we offer and the services we offer. It's all the same language that we would use to apply for a government grant for money.
Sure.
You know, there was nothing technically offensive about it, but some people did have concerns. We were running a kite-making workshop, and there were families with parents with very young children engaging in our kite-making workshop. Allegedly, some parents complained directly to the Lord Mayor that it was offensive.
Some people are very easily offended.
I suppose so. They're certainly entitled to their opinion. I guess we were disappointed with the decision that the Lord Mayor made, but he did send a letter of apology on Tuesday evening. And since then, obviously, we've been in communication with the Lord Mayor's office. And we've made an appointment to speak with him next week to continue the dialogue.
Right, because I was going
to hopefully prevent things happening like this again.
Yeah, because I was going to say, what little did come out in public was, very minimal, as it say. We just got the one quote: "It's regretful that these actions were taken, and it's right for to apologise for the angst it has caused," were the mayor's words. And then he refused to make any more comment. In fact, he declined the offer of an interview tonight as well.
And he'd also refused to actually respond to claims that he had made homophobic remarks in the past as well. So you would think that in light of what was going on, he would be refuting those as well.
Yeah, I really can't comment on those. I mean, I've never spoken to the mayor personally. I've only sent an email to him and received an email back from his office. So,
but you do now have an appointment for a meeting with him.
We most certainly do, and I guess in that meeting we'll be focusing on ways that we can move forward together and prevent this happening. So my recommendation to the mayor is that the staff undertake some anti-discrimination sensitivity training, whether that's through 2010 or another organisation, that really doesn't matter, but using it as an opportunity to upskill staff and increase their awareness about the sensitivities, and that actually that choice is a form of discrimination and does actually have a really powerful impact on marginalising an already extremely marginalised group of young people.
Now, what are you going to do if he doesn't? I mean, what are you going to do if it's just a kind of personal kind of apology and saying, yeah, I didn't really have any choice about it because of the young families that were there, and you know, he's basically just making a gesture because so many people signed that petition online. What if he doesn't commit to any concrete steps?
I can certainly appreciate why people would be sceptical of his response, and I guess I don't have anything else to go on bar the response letter itself and the phone calls I've had with his staff to book the appointment. I guess there is a chance that they won't take up our recommendations, in which case I'd be curious to see, you know, what the Lord Mayor actually does, of Parramatta, I should clarify, the Lord Mayor of Parramatta, yeah, does actually have in mind in terms of working together in the future. I will say, though, that I also spoke to the CEO of Parramatta Council, and he was extremely apologetic. He responded before the Lord Mayor did, and was genuinely sorry for any, you know, injury caused to our staff or our young people. And it would be fantastic to continue working with Parramatta City Council. We've had a really good relationship over the years, and they were the ones that invited us to it. And I know that we've had a number of messages from staff there in support of 2010. So we'll definitely be focusing on both the mayor and the staff of the council to keep working together. We have a number of projects in the Western Sydney that fall under their council, so it'd be really great to keep pushing forward.
Sure. Rod Swift.
Two quick questions for you, Terence. Firstly, from what I understand, in the initial media reports, the Lord Mayor denied that he was behind the moves, and now, of course, that's come to be the opposite. Firstly, what do you think about that? And secondly, he is the Liberal Lord Mayor for Parramatta. He's a former Liberal Party candidate in the federal election of 2007, where he completed a survey by the fundamentalist group Family Voice Australia, formerly the Festival of Light, where he said that he didn't support civil unions, didn't support funding of Mardi Gras, and didn't support anti-discrimination laws. Ironically, he could be up in front of those if he keeps his behaviour up. Do you think that is disappointing, and do you really expect that much out of him, given his past record?
I think the difference here is that the broader community has spoken up about this issue. You know, I'm not entirely sure if I would have got a response to my sole email, but there are over 12,000 signatures on that change.org petition, but it is also a lot of people being very vocal on Facebook and who've contacted the council directly and the Lord Mayor's office, and also people who've contacted the anti-discrimination board as well. So there's a number of options going forward. I really couldn't say until after we've had that meeting what our next steps will be.
Yeah, Terence, we're going to have to leave it there. When you've had your meeting with the Mayor, do let us know how it turned out.
Sure.
And we can tell our listeners. In the meantime, thank you for joining us this evening.
My pleasure. Thanks very much.
That was Terence Humphreys, Acting Managing Director of 2010. As I said at the top of the show, just being out and proud is important for members of our community, but it's also important that our allies and supporters are vocal in their support for us. Hudson Taylor was a straight US college athlete who decided he wanted sport to change its homophobic ways, and he conceived the notion of athlete ally, straight sportsmen speaking out in support of their LGBTI colleagues. He talked about his motivation and his latest high-profile Australian signing to join newshound Hikaru Freeman.
Welcome first to Hudson Taylor of Athlete Ally. Welcome to Australia in a very individual Skype-like kind of way.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you just basically broke today that you guys have just signed up David Pocock. How did you come across David?
Well, I've seen David speak out and through a number of articles and videos and online, and we communicated initially through Twitter, and so we've just kind of kept in touch over the past I'd say year and a half, and we're now at a place where we're really trying to make a push to get more professional athletes to sign on and speak out as athlete allies. So I'm really looking forward to working with David and helping to spread the message in rugby and throughout Australia.
Well, has he given you any further insight into the state of being an LGBT athlete in Australia?
No, he hasn't. I know that he is very interested in engaging both his team and other leagues in this conversation. And from what I've read in the news, I think LGBT issues in sports is kind of on the tip of everybody's tongue, and it seems as that's becoming increasingly the case in Australia. So it sounds like there's a lot of good work to be done there.
Yeah, we're definitely a sports mad country, I would say, to say the least. Now, being a straight ally, what really inspired you to create Athlete Ally? Was there some personal story that you came across, or?
Yeah, so I happen to be one of the few Division I wrestlers / theater majors. So I was living between these two very, very different worlds, in which I had many friends who were coming out in theater, and they were welcomed and respected with open arms. And I think seeing the juxtaposition between that and the homophobia of the locker room, hearing my teammates and sometimes even my coaches use homophobic and derogatory and demeaning language initially put this into perspective for me and made me want to do something about it, because I've wrestled since I was 6 years old. I love sport, but it is flawed in many, many ways, and I know that it can and should be better. And so I really felt like I was in a unique position to do something about it, and I decided to.
That's really inspiring.
But the real launching off point from private advocacy to forming a nonprofit and making this a real mission of mine came my senior year of college. I wore a human rights campaign sticker. So it's this equal sign with, it's an organization that lobbies for LGBT policy in the U.S. And I wore this sticker, and I did interview with this website called Outsports that covers a lot of LGBT issues in athletics about why I was an ally and why I was wearing this sticker. And in response to that single interview, I got like 2,000 emails from closeted kids across the country. And that was the point at which I realized, you know, if a college wrestler can get 2,000 emails for wearing a sticker and speaking out, if I could get, a football player or a basketball player or a rugby player, you know, someone like David to speak out, that would really make a big difference and save people's lives. And so that's how Athlete Ally was born and why I continue to do what I do.
Now, what sort of role do you see Athlete Ally playing in the future?
I mean, I believe that, sport continues to be one of the last closets. So athletics in general is very, very, very much behind the curve when it comes to providing and creating a safe space for the LGBT community. I believe that Athlete Ally can play a big role in this, in changing this, because I feel that for every athlete ally that speaks out, another person can feel comfortable coming out. And so that's really the mission of all of this, is to define a movement of straight athlete allies who want to speak out and start doing the right thing.
How can basically anyone listening to this, if they want to become involved in Athlete Allies, and we broadcast to the world, but we also focus in on Australia, how can they actually get involved if they're really just, you know, a amateur player or anything like that?
Well, first and foremost, you can check out our website at www.athleteally.org. We have a pledge, which I've really been trying to get lots of athletic departments and athletes and coaches to sign. It's a really simple affirmative statement that says, I pledge to lead my athletic community toward welcoming and respecting all persons, regardless of their perceived or actual sexual orientation, gender identity, or gender expression. Beginning right now, I will do my part to promote the best of athletics by making all players feel welcome and respected on and off the playing field. A lot of what I think we can do as an athletic community is work towards collective action. So like with this pledge, for instance, if you know a sports team in your community, you know, and that entire team takes a pledge or speaks out collectively, that sends a really strong statement to other teams and other communities. And I think focusing on a model of collective action, of really trying to bring people together and speak out on this issue will really encourage athletic culture to shift. We can all do more in our daily lives. You don't just have to be an athlete. I think we can all be a little bit more conscious of how we speak to and about one another. We can make other people more conscious of the things that they say. I think that beyond that, you can wear your beliefs on your sleeve. I mean, more often than not, people don't let the world know that they're allies. And so that remains an issue. That keeps people in the closet, you know. So if you can wear a T-shirt or a sticker or a wristband or put a patch on your backpack to show that you're an ally, that will start to raise the culture and start a dialogue that will lead us to where we want to go.
Well, thank you so much, Hudson, for tuning in and dealing with a little bit of the technical difficulties we've had. Thank you again. And listen, you're doing great work, and we hope to see you possibly in person down here at Joy.
Well, that may be not in the not too distant future. Let's hope.
All right. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
That was athlete ally founder Hudson Taylor speaking earlier with Joy reporter Hikaru Freeman. Now, I've had a couple of more SMSs come in the meantime. From Rob Mitchell, this one's for Matt. He says, apologies if this has already been canvassed, but why doesn't Pride ask the bi and trans AFL members of the community to march up front with Jason and the players? If Pride's about inclusion, why don't we include everybody? There's one for you, Matt.
We do include everybody, and that goes to the core of it. Basically, we're giving free air to the no to homophobia in sport. Transphobia and biphobia are too important an issue to then garner it in with another campaign. With the march, it's about reflecting, it's about celebrating, and it's also opening that discussion. And so our first discussion basically is Jason and homophobia in sport leading the march. We then have that discussion, the reflection and the celebration of HIV with the Enough campaign. We then go on to that marriage equality issue. And is this the last bastion? Absolutely not. We've got transphobia and biphobia that's just as important as all those other issues. What we need is that clear air to basically give it the full due that it is offered. And by having that with Jason, we've decided that the focus is on Jason and tying in with Hudson Taylor, his straight allies, mm-hmm. and leading the march in that regard. But we're more than happy to have that discussion for next year's march in regards to trans and bi members of the community.
And following on from there, he's raised another point, actually, saying, when is it going to become embarrassing for AFL Players Association CEO Matt Finnis that, in fact, professional AFL players are still refusing to engage with our community? I think
that's stretching it a bit far. To be fair, I think there is a discussion that's going on, well and truly, in that regard. I don't think there's AFL players ignoring that at all. So, yeah.
Okay, well, we're going to have to call it a day there. This is Doug Pollard, and this has been The Rainbow Report.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.